Well, hey, everybody, welcome to episode 219 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Coldwell Banker is rooted in the legacy of our founder, renowned businessman and philanthropist Marvin Pomeranz. We continue to tell his story through our love of people, homes, and the communities we serve. Our integrity guides our focus to empower people to make the best real estate decisions possible. We pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and the most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, well, we're going to talk some boys track later on, but my first guest tonight is now the former head coach of the Ankeny girls basketball team as he announced his resignation from the position just last week. He coached the Hawkettes for 7 years and guided them to a 75-77 record. He is Drew McAnally. Drew, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
Good, Dan. How are you? Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, you bet. Well, you told me last week that the reason for your departure was pretty simple. I mean, it's just family related, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. Got a son and daughter. Son's going into eighth grade, and then a couple years, my daughter will be there. And, you know, you start adding up the games you're going to miss, and it just really hit home, hit the heart. That time with your kids is a very short window, and I can coach for as long as I live if I choose to, but the time with your kids playing school sports and sports in general and even living in at your house is a very small time frame, and I don't want to wish that away and be selfish with my career. So
yeah, you can't get those years back.
No, they're irreplaceable, and it's their journey now. It's not my journey. So
well, you told me the story of your wife's uncle, Mike Street, telling your dad back in the day that, you never know when you aren't going to have the opportunity to watch your child play, and that quote has always stuck with you. Well, Drew, speaking of Mike Street, I wanted to ask you about the Chris Street documentary that aired on the Big Ten Network a few months ago. I actually covered some of Chris's games when he was a star at Indianola in the early stages of my career, so I saw a lot of familiar faces in that documentary. I thought it was really well done, but it wasn't an easy thing to watch just because of how tragic his death was. You know, what did you think of the documentary?
I thought it was phenomenally done, and we got to do a special family viewing down in Norwalk at Betsy's house, the sister. Mm-hmm. There was a snowstorm that night, but by golly, we got in the van and we drove down there, and it was a commercial free, so that was really nice. And I just thought it was extremely well done, and obviously my wife being a first cousin, and you know, and with a lot of brought back a lot of emotions and memories, and
oh sure,
and it was really cool for all the kids to see just what an empowering and powerful legacy Christopher has left still to this day, 30 years later. And then also, you know, I played for Bert Hansen, and me and Bert are still really, really close. We talk a lot, and he's been an unbelievable mentor for me. And I just thought he did an amazing job on that documentary. He was so well-spoken.
Oh, for sure. Well, you certainly left the Ankeny program, you know, in a better place than where it was when you took it over 7 years ago. I just wanted to discuss, you know, some of your career highlights with you. The Hawkettes had won a total of just 15 games in the three seasons before your arrival in 2016. So when you were hired, what did you feel like was your greatest challenge? Did you just feel like, you know, the first objective was just to change the culture a little bit?
We had to change the culture. We had to get buy-in. We had to get belief. We really, as I said in our original interview, we really started from ground zero. And, you know, Cody Myers, who now coaches for me, she'd gone through five different head coaches in 3 years. And so there just needed to be some stability, some trust, and just kind of laying the foundation of what we believed in and doing things the right way. And that's where we started building on that the first year. And then the second year, we had a really good year. And you know, things really started moving forward. So,
well, yeah, your first team went 7-15. And then in year two, you guys went 11-12 and almost had a winning season. And then later in year five, you guys finally had that first winning season by going 10-7. Did you feel like maybe that was the turning point that kind of laid the foundation for the success over these last 2 years?
That fifth year?
Right.
I really thought we really turned the corner. You know, a lot of people aren't going to remember this because they don't live it like I do. But that second year, we had some big wins. We upset Ames at home. We upset Valley, who was ranked, and got to the sub-state final, lost to Caitlin at Dowling. But we had a really good year that year. But the next year, we were borderline maybe a state tournament team. And that was when Abby Johnson – got hurt.
Right.
And Ellie Mashoff battled some concussions, and Ashley Harrington had a wrist injury. We had a 2-year span there where we just battled a lot of injuries, and I thought we were pretty good then, and we found a way to still win games, but we were kind of decimated at times with injuries. And when you're rebuilding a program, that really hurts because we don't have that established, you know, success, tradition, and depth for that matter. So,
well, then your best season came in the 2021-22 campaign, where your team went 16-7. You tied for the CIML Iowa Conference title. You guys earned a share of the crown with a dramatic come-from-behind win against Ankeny Centennial. And, of course, that was also the program's first-ever victory against the Jaguars. I'm sure that's a win that you and the players, you know, you're never going to forget that one, are you?
No. And those are special memories. And it was a historic night for the girls program on the south side. And those are fun times, and I'll cherish those forever. You know, as I said, I'm putting family before my career right now. So,
well, then in your final season, you guys went 12-11. It was a little bit of an up and down year, but I thought your schedule had a lot to do with that, because Ankeny became a part of the new CIML conference this year, and 5 of the 9 teams from the league went on to qualify for state. I mean, your schedule was just a gauntlet, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a gauntlet, and we knew that going in, and we had a good year, the girls, they stayed together. They stayed the course. We lost some heartbreakers. I mean, we were 12-11, easily could have been 14-7 regular season. And, you know, we could have easily had anywhere between 14 and 16 wins with the ball bouncing here and there. We had some heartbreaking losses. But that's sports and that's basketball. And that's why I love high school athletics so much, because it teaches these kids the most important lesson in the game, in the game of life. And life isn't perfect. Life doesn't always go as planned, and you got to learn how to deal with adversity and pull through those tough times. And as I would tell the players a lot, it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how many times you get up. Tough times don't last, tough people do. And I was just so honored and privileged to coach such amazing young women these 7 years, Dan. I can't express to you enough just the character, the work ethic, the attitudes. It was an honor. It's an honor to coach in Ankeny. This is a great place, a unique place, a special place. I just want to say thank you for all the support from the community, my administration, parents, the players, and obviously my family. It's been an amazing 7-year ride, and this is a very special place, and it's very near and dear to my heart.
Oh, for sure. Well, yeah, we couldn't talk about this season without mentioning the game against Centennial again, because you guys were able to beat the Jaguars again, this time on their home court, and that was probably your biggest win of the season. After the way that they handled you guys back at your place in December, and with the way they were playing again down the stretch, I'll be honest, I didn't see that win coming, but man, what a big win for you guys.
That was a big one, and it gets back to what I just said. Those girls stuck together. We'd been knocked down a little bit, and just a total testament to their character. And it was a huge win. That was a fun night. And that group really came together at the end of the year. And they were very family-oriented and very close. And that was, once again, a special memory that I will cherish forever. And I'm looking forward to these returning players. I wish them nothing but the best, and looking forward to watching them play. And great things are upon them.
Well, you guys did close out the regular season with a 67-36 loss to Valley, which you know, just shot the lights out that night, and that was one of the teams that eventually qualified for state. Of course, that was your worst loss of the season. I wasn't sure if you guys, you know, would be able to regroup from that or not, but obviously you did, because you came back a week later. You beat Waukee Northwest for the third time this season in the first regional game, and then you traveled over to Davenport North, and you gave them, you know, everything that they wanted in the regional final. Lost 65-61. You know, you had to be happy with the way your kids responded to that.
Absolutely, and as a coach, you know, at the end of the year, there's a famous saying by the Hall of Fame football coach. You know, I'm a big football guy, Bill Parcells, and he always says, "Can you look the man in the mirror?" And I can definitely look myself in the mirror and know that we did things the right way. And no, we didn't get to our ultimate goal that we talked about all year, getting down to Wells Fargo, but we did things the right way. And the girls were great. My staff was great. The administration was great. Parents supported. It was really fun. So,
well, of course, these last 2 years, last 2 years, you guys came so close to meeting that goal. Yeah. A year ago, you lost to Roosevelt on a last-second basket, and you kind of touched on next year already. But I'm sure you feel like, you know, the program is in a place now with the girls coming back that, you know, maybe that's a goal they could reach next year.
You know, one of my biggest supporters from day one has been Mr. Brent Butcher, the guy that hired me. And he sent me a really, really nice message after he heard I resigned. And then his final line is there, the ultimate goal in anything you do in life is leave what you started in a better place than what you found it. And that really hit home with me. And I can forever know that we did that in these 7 years. We left the program in a way better spot than when we came in. So
I don't know if you got a chance to watch much of this year's state tournament, or maybe you didn't want to watch. I'm sure that's kind of a tough watch for you.
I'm not going to lie. This is probably the least amount of state. And this is the first time in 7 years I didn't take a day and even go down. It was a heart-wrenching loss, and I didn't even go down. But, I mean, I watched a little bit on computer and then TV when it was on, so.
Well, I thought Johnston, you know, was maybe primed to win a second straight title after they beat Centennial in the semifinals. But, boy, Pleasant Valley lived up to the number one ranking by winning the title. And I just wasn't sure how good they were because of their schedule. Yeah. But were you surprised that they won it?
I think if you would have told me that, like, before the state tournament, yeah. But then as I started watching them, I was like, that – with that length and athleticism playing that zone, you know, a lot of us in the CIML, we don't play much zone, and it can be tricky, and it's really tricky when you're going against good athletes with that length. And the one girl literally could just take away the middle by herself, and, you know, you're shooting the ball in arena, which is hard, and shooting percentages aren't always good down there. And, yeah, they just played it really well. They played it with a lot of man and matchup concepts, and yeah. The more I watched them, I mean, I still thought it would be Johnston, but it didn't surprise me as much as after watching them a little bit, for sure. So
yeah, they were legit.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, Drew, moving forward, you know, do you know if the school has any kind of a timetable for hiring replacement?
I don't. I know it just got posted yesterday, and obviously, legality speaking, it's got to be posted for 14 days, and then, you know, Adam and his crew will probably process and get some people in to interview, and I'm going to guess probably their goal is maybe by the 1st of May with the whole process. So,
well, I know the school recently promoted from within when they hired Jeff Bauer to become the new head football coach. Do you know if any of your assistants, you know, want to pursue the job?
They don't. And so that's moving forward. It'll be someone from, I'm guessing, outside the district. So, or it could be someone within the district, but outside my staff, obviously. So.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure there'll be plenty of interest in the job.
As I've said, you know, this is a special place to be, so.
Well, even though the team will graduate some key seniors, most notably Jenna Pitts, who was a four-year starter and was so instrumental in your success, the program will return some huge pieces next year. Three starters will be back, led by sophomore guard Savannah Gage. You know, she took a really big step forward this year, I thought, by averaging 16.6 points, and she earned multiple All-State honors. And I know she's already received several D1 offers, but, you know, she's really got a bright future, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does, and Savannah is – this is my 20th year of coaching. She's one of the most coachable kids, hardworking, great kid. My daughter just adores her. When I talk to college coaches, I just said she's a program girl. She's everything you want for your program, basketball and out and on and off the court. Savannah is an unbelievable student, unbelievable person, and a great player, and she's got a bright future.
Yeah, if she continues to develop her game, you know, could you see her getting some Power 5 offers at some point?
I do not think that's outside the possibility at all. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Well, the other returning starters will be junior guard Carson Jacks and freshman guard Jayla Williams, who are also planning to play college ball. Jayla certainly showed, you know, flashes of her potential this season, and she's just so athletic. It seems like, you know, her ceiling is really high, isn't it?
I think the sky's the limit for Jayla, and she's got an extremely bright future. Her athleticism is unbelievable, and her perimeter game got much better as the year went on, and she can obviously rebound, defend. She's just absolutely lethal in the open court, and yes, her future is extremely bright.
Well, Drew, before I let you go, I just wanted to get your thoughts on another topic. Of course, you had a chance to coach against Caitlin Clark a few years ago, and one of the more memorable wins of your Ankeny career came in the 2018-19 season when Caitlin was a junior at Dowling, and you guys beat the Maroons 64-61 despite 47 points from Clark. she made 17 of 35 shots from the field, but she had just two assists in that game. You know, do you remember much about that game?
Well, we kind of flipped the script, and we knew we had nothing to lose. And, yeah, I remember that game quite well. But we'd been watching film, and a lot of people were kind of what I call the NBA double, where you go double the star. And but she's such a good passer, as we saw in this tournament run with the Hawks, that we just decided to really just take the role players. As you said, she only had two assists. We guarded the heck out of the role players. We obviously guarded Caitlin, and just, but we never doubled her, and we never helped to her. And, you know, it, sometimes with a game plan, you look like a genius, and sometimes you don't look real smart as a coach, Dan, and you live with that as a head coach. And that night, it prevailed for us, and we won the game. So,
well, that explains why she had 35 shots. Huh?
Exactly.
Well, I think she was like a top five player nationally in the class of 2020, and she may have been even number one by some recruiting services. So I don't think there was any doubt that she would be a great player in college. But I don't think anybody saw her becoming, you know, this incredible player who would essentially transcend the sport. And I know you're a Hawkeye fan, so I'm sure you've really enjoyed, you know, seeing what she has done.
Yeah.
It's kind of surreal what she's become, though, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And you know, there's so many wonderful stories about Caitlin. I'm fortunate enough to know her personally, as her dad's from Indianola, and I know her dad, me being from Indianola, and he played for Bert Hansen, and I played for Bert, and I got, me and Caitlin would talk after our games when we play each other. And you know, a couple really cool stories is her junior year, they get beat out at the semifinals, and the team comes down to Buzzer Billy's, and I'm down there with some coaches having some dinner, and Caitlin walked over to me and spent 30 minutes just sitting there talking to me. And I'll never forget that. And she, you know, just after a tough, heartbreaking loss in the semis at the state tournament. And then just more recently, I shot her a text message and got her on the phone with my daughters. My daughter got a Christmas present that she was going over to a Hawkeye women's game with her grandma. And Caitlin was all about getting her down on the floor and took her in the locker room after the game. And that's just a special, you know, everybody talks about her being such a special player, but she's even more of a special person. And sometimes, you know, her competitiveness and some of her dramatic things she does, which I thought she was amazingly better at this year, gets overshadowed with just the incredible person she is. Caitlin is one of the most kindest, sweetest people I've ever met. So
yeah, she's really handled this fame well, hasn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was amazed in that game against South Carolina. I'd heard how the Gamecocks might be the greatest team ever, but you know, I didn't realize that they had players that you didn't have to guard on the perimeter,
yeah.
and that their offense basically was just to force it into the big girls, even if they're guarded by two or three defenders. You know, they didn't really seem to have a backup plan, did they?
No, they didn't. And I was a little surprised with how they guarded Iowa too. Iowa got a lot of layups, but they kind of like we did with Dowling that year, they didn't want the role players to shoot open threes and get easy looks. And, you know, Iowa capitalized, and Lisa had an answer for everything South Carolina did. And, It was a historic win for the Hawks.
Oh, for sure. Well, then it was kind of unfortunate that, you know, that Sunday's championship game was overshadowed by the terrible officiating and some of the trash talking that was going on, because, you know, it really was an entertaining game when the two teams were allowed to play. What did you think of that whole game?
I mean, I thought, unfortunately, the officiating kind of took away the aurora of a national championship game. And, you know, the women's game has come so far, and it just kind of hurt the spirit of the game a little bit. But as far as the trash talk, and you just got two competitive teams that want to win a national title, and I think that all got blown out of proportion a little bit. But once again, Caitlin's handled it with nothing but class, dignity and class, and that just, once again, speaks volumes of who she is. So,
well, certainly a fun ride to follow along. Well, hey, Drew, thanks a lot for coming in tonight. I appreciate it.
Dan, I just want to personally thank you for the last 7 years. And as I always say, my line with you is thanks for all you do for high school sports. But I do think that people in Ankeny need to realize just how cool and special Ankeny Fanatic is and how awesome it is for our athletes and our fans, the coverage you give. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your support the last 7 years. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I got a great job. I wouldn't trade it for another job in the world. So it's people like you that make it such a great job.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. So thank you, Dan.
You bet. All right. You're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. MJ Properties is also a sponsor of the podcast. Wanted to give a shout out to MJ Properties. We appreciate their giving us a nice place out here at their office to record the podcast. That's where we have been doing the podcast now since last fall, and we plan to be here for a long time. So just wanted to give a shout out to MJ Properties. All right. Well, my next guest is a realtor at Coldwell Banker, and he's been on the podcast a number of times. He is Andy Logan. Andy, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
Hey, it's great to be here, Dan. Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Well, I know you're a big golfer. Have you played any golf yet this spring?
I have not. The boys have been out several times, but I haven't ventured out yet.
Are you waiting for the warmer weather or what?
Absolutely. My old body needs the warm temps.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of this, 40-degree weather.
No.
Well, I'm sure you're going to watch some of the Masters this weekend. Who do you think is going to win it?
My pick's Rory.
Rory?
Yep.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him win it.
It'd be fun because it'd be his career Grand Slam, too. Right. So he'd be the sixth person ever to do that. That'd be pretty fun to see.
Do you think Tiger's got a chance at all to do anything?
I think he has a chance to do something. I don't think at this point he's got a chance to win, but... You know what? Tiger's proven so many people wrong. Who am I?
Yeah. I never would have thought he would have won it, a few years ago when he did. So.
Yep. Absolutely. 2019. Yep.
That's right. Well, let's talk a little bit of real estate. Let's begin with the interest rates. So one of your colleagues, a couple weeks ago, didn't even want to talk about them because apparently they had gone up. So where are they at now? What are they doing?
Yeah, you know what? Interest rates, historically, interest rates are still fantastic. The people that don't want to talk about it, it is what it is, right? So just like anything else in life, we have ebbs and flows. Right now we're flowing a little bit, but we're still under 7% interest rates. We're anywhere from high fives to mid sixes, which historically is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And they do pretty much change every day, don't they?
Right now they are, yes.
Is there any way you can predict what they're going to do, or is it just kind of a crapshoot?
Absolutely not. Yes, it's a crapshoot. It depends so much just on so many variables.
Gotcha. Well, another thing a lot of people are talking about is the tax assessments that just came out. I know we just got ours in the mail the other day. Our property went up by like 16%.
Yep.
I'm sure you're hearing a lot about that, aren't you?
Absolutely. And here's, I did, in fact, on the way over here tonight, I had a conversation with my mom and dad, and it was, theirs had gone up. And I said, guys, it doesn't matter if it went up 500% or 4%, because the most by Iowa law that we can go up in a year is 3%.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa law mandates that 3% is the most that we can go up on our tax assessments. So it's not as big a deal as people want to make it out to be. They look at that total number and get scared and intimidated by it. But honestly, it's not going to make a huge difference day to day for you.
Well, if somebody by chance wants to sell their home, it's good to have the property value go up, isn't it?
100%. That is definitely the time you want it to go up.
Well, is there anything else we want to talk about with the real estate?
Hey, you know what? We do. We still have five places over on, or MJ Property still has five places on Northwest 29th Street. Fantastic standalone villa homes, no HOA. There's almost 1,600 square feet on the main with about 900 finished down for under $400,000. New construction, MJ quality. You just can't find it in the marketplace.
So do you have a lot of interest in those properties?
We do. We have a ton of showings on them. And with the warmer weather coming, I anticipate great things happening.
Well, they sound nice. I might have to go check them out, even though I'm not really looking for a place. But I'm going to have to check it out anyway.
Absolutely. We'd love to see you, Dan.
All right, Andy. Well, hey, thanks a lot for coming in. I appreciate it.
Hey, we always appreciate being on with you.
You bet. All right. You're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. At Coldwell Banker, you're not one of many clients, you're our most important client. We listen to your needs to develop long-lasting relationships and provide the best services, professional support, and resources in the industry. We're constantly exploring new and innovative ways to elevate your experience and exceed your expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, well, my final guest tonight is the new head coach of the Ankeny Boys track team. He is Jordan Mullen. Jordan, it's nice to meet you, and thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Nice to meet you, too, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you bet. Well, I know it's your birthday tomorrow, so happy early birthday.
I do appreciate that as well. I get to go to a track meet for my birthday, so I'm excited about that.
There you go. Well, your team's off to a good start this season. I know it's early, but you got to be really happy with where you guys are at right now.
Yeah, we're sitting real well. Like I said, I know my biggest thing to the track team this year is we're focusing on Ankeny. We can control our destination, and we can't control what other teams are doing, but everything's looking really nice right now.
Well, before we break down your team in a little detail, I did want to talk about your background a little bit. I know you told me for the preview story before the season that you don't like to talk about yourself, but I'm sure we have some listeners who aren't familiar with you and like to learn a little bit more about you. So I know you were a seven-time state champion in Atlantic who went on to become a standout hurdler at Iowa, where you won two Big Ten titles and you were a two-time All-American. So did you always run both the high and the low hurdles, or did you kind of specialize in one or the other?
You are right. I don't like to talk about myself. I had a decorated career that I'm very proud of, but that journey's passed. But I mostly specialized in the high hurdles. My senior year, my coach, Josh Rasmussen, at the time, we needed another event that we could get 10 points in at state. So we kind of made a deal. I'd ran them 5 times my senior year. Turned out in my favor. Ended up beating my roommate, Keaton Rickles. He was my roommate for 3 or 4 years at Iowa. He also ran at the track team there. Had a lot of fun, and like I said, didn't really specialize in those, but my Big Ten championships came in the high hurdles, and then obviously the 4x1 too.
Gotcha. Well, with your background then, you know, do you spend a little more time with the hurdlers than you do the other events, or do you have to spread yourself out around a little bit?
I like to spread myself around a little bit. Like I said, the staff didn't change much. We brought a couple new guys on, but predominantly right now I'm training the 2-4 group and then obviously the shuttle hurdles and the high hurdlers as well and the 400 hurdlers. So I spread myself out a little bit, but like I said, we have the coaches in place that they're where we need them and they're doing a really good job as well.
Well, you previously coached in your hometown in Atlantic, where your teams did have a lot of success. You guided the Trojans to 3 consecutive Hawkeye 10 crowns, and you led the team to a pair of top 3 finishes in the Class 3A state meet. Now, is that hard for you to leave your hometown? I'm sure you know you have a lot of friends and family there, don't you?
It was bittersweet. Like I said, I left Atlantic to venture off into the collegiate career at the NAIA level, and I thought I found my dream job, but I was gone too much, and it was time to get back to the family. So I stepped back down to the high school level, and we didn't look back. But like I said, it was a bittersweet thing there. I ran into a wave of really good talent in a small school, and we took full advantage of that talent. And like I said, never looked back. I give all my credit to coaching. Getting me into coaching was Alan Jenkins. He was there at the time. Now he's the head basketball coach at Southeast Polk. He doesn't know what he means to me as a person, but he's the one that started my career into coaching, and I've never looked back since. And like I said, I coach for the Pure Joy and helping these young men turn in or be able to hit their goals and see the smiles on their faces.
Well, coming to the new program here, you know, what was the biggest challenge that you faced right here off the bat, just getting to know the kids?
Getting to know the kids, the biggest challenge, when I started in Atlantic, I think we had 19 kids out for track. We've got a roughly right around about 130 out for track. The biggest thing is not getting to know all the kids. When I left Atlantic, we had 47 out, and I knew everyone personally of them. And now I have over 48 just in my group that I train. Like I said, I will never complain about numbers. I want to hit 150 next year. You know, I want another 20 kids to join the success we're having and the success that's going to stay in Ankeny. But like I said, that is the biggest challenge, Dan, is getting to know everyone. And not only that, I take pride. I want everyone to be able to run, and it is very difficult. You know, we're stretching ourselves thin with 2 or 3 meets a week so we can get everyone to run. And but like I said, right now we're successfully getting to do that.
Well, you took over a team that placed 3rd in Class 4A a year ago with 53 points and returned 15 state qualifiers. So I'm guessing you had to be pretty optimistic, you know, coming into the season. Could you see the talent gap right away between a good Class 3A team and a good Class 4A program?
Yes, I've talked to the coaches and the kids a lot about that. 3A, 2A, 1A, they're all very, very competitive. It's just being a little blunt here, you run into a different type of athlete at this level, you know, and they do, you know, the physique-wise sticks out, you know. But the other thing we battle here in the bigger classes is they want a single sport. And in a smaller school district, we didn't have to beg kids to come out because we needed every athlete out for every sport, and they knew that, and it made them better for other sports. So that's the biggest thing we overcome at this level, I believe, in my opinion. You know, because I know there's a lot of kids walking that Ankeny Halls that would benefit our team right now.
Sure.
And they might be stuck into, oh, I just want to play one sport. But, you know, and I'm not picking on that at all. That's completely fine. But it is one of those things where I'd love every athlete to be out for track because it's going to make them better for their number one sport.
Well, I can't think of any sport that any other kid would play where track wouldn't benefit him somehow.
But I agree with that 100%, Dan.
Well, you mentioned that you know, most of the coaching staff is the same as the previous years. So did that help you with the transition?
It did. I owe that coaching staff so much. They're tech savvy. They got me going on that. But more importantly, they take care of stuff that they know I'm busy outside of track as well, and they have no problem. They have jumped in headfirst with me and say, what do you need me to do? And I owe them the world right now. Like I said, they helped me so much, and I couldn't ask for a better staff around me right now.
Last Monday, you took a group of about 15 athletes up to Brookings, South Dakota for the Ruth Marski Indoor Invitational, which was held on the campus of South Dakota State University. Your team racked up 106 points to win the team title, defeating 19 other schools. And I know you guys faced some pretty good competition up there, but boy, your team really stepped up to the challenge, didn't they?
They did. So I've got a motto this year that I've kind of changed off of my philosophy, and I don't talk about times. I talk about winning heats and winning races, and these kids have fully bought into this 100% because we are in a competitive enough area to where if you win the race, your time's going to be there. So it's taken our focus completely off of just what anything is like and just go win. And if we can train our bodies to win, when it does count, if we're winning or not, we're already going to be doing that because that's what we've done all year.
Well, one of your talented sophomores, Tyler Sickerson, was named the athlete of the meet after he won both the 100 and the 200 in personal best times. He also ran in the third place 4x100 relay. Now, last year as a freshman, he kind of ran in the shadows of teammate Tyrese Miller, who was the state champion in the 400, and he also anchored the state champion sprint medley relay. But boy, it sure looks like Tyler has a chance to become, you know, that hammer for you this year, doesn't he?
Yes, Tyler and I have we've talked a lot. I'm very excited I get to work with him for 3 years. He is one kid in my group. He has set some really high goals, and I promised him that we would hit those goals. Obviously, I can't do it for him anymore, but I can give him the weapons to be as lethal as he wants to be. He's going to be a very special kid, not only this year, but he's going to be a fun one to watch the next 2 years as well.
And then your standout hurdler, Carter Acola, also won the 110 hurdles in 14.4 seconds, which met the Blue Oval standard for the Drake Relays, which also set a school record. And I see he just picked up a scholarship offer from South Dakota State, so he must have impressed some other people up there too, huh?
He did. I know the head coach, the hurdles coach up at South Dakota State, and I put a bug in Eric's head, which is this the hurdles coach over there, and I said, I got a special one. And I didn't know, I was just going off his times last year, but I've seen a lot of hurdlers. I'm not biased. I love my hurdlers. They hit a little deeper with me because that's what I did. But when I saw CJ, when I saw his time last year, I was like, that's not even the tip of the iceberg for you. And he opened up the season about where I thought he could be, but there's a lot more under the water for him to do yet when it comes to he can be really special this year. And he is so driven right now that all he wants to do is win, and with that attitude, he's going to be really tough to beat.
Well, now you told me that he started to hit the wall at about hurdle eight up there, so with that time that he posted, I know you said you don't focus on times, but you got to think maybe he can go under 14 at some point.
I've been coaching for a long time at this level, and I've always wanted a sub-14 hurdler. Do I think he can do it? Yes. It's going to have to be the perfect conditions and everything. We had a heck of a hurdle workout through hurdle 7 and finished through 110, and I had him at 13:39, obviously missing three hurdles in there, but it was our first extended hurdle workout, and he's got the speed and he's got the mechanics to do it. It's just we got to put it together now.
Well, there are several other highlights from that meet. Ethan Zuber and Levi Hill went 1-2 in the 3200. Jake Bosch and Abel Squires went 2-4 in the 800, and Squires also placed second in the 1600. And all four of those guys were key members of the Ankeny cross country team that placed third in the state meet last fall. You know, so your distance crew appears to be in pretty good hands, doesn't it?
Yes, our distance crew, Lindemann and Schlicker, are doing a great job with them. Our distance crew, our team is super balanced this year. The distance guys are the guys I've been trying to get to know because just where they want to be and they want to be able to help our team, I think they're above where I want them to be right now. Like I said, I'm not the best distance coach, but I know good times, and they're putting them out there. And not only that, they're winning a lot of meets, and they're placing high if they're not winning it. And then we're, like I said, like you said, we're having guys go 1-2. That's a lot of big points and meets that are very competitive. And like I said, the biggest thing that I've got going this year is we're not worried about the times. We want to win. And we want to win our heats. If we're not winning, you know, just to train that body to say, hey, because then when we are fresh, because we've been training really hard, when we are fresh, when we do need that extra gear, it's going to be there. So.
All right, and then Jack Belding added a second-place finish in the 400, and he's another versatile guy that can run a lot of sprints for you, and he's back from that state champion sprint medley relay along with Sickerson and Tyson Miller. And I haven't seen or heard much about Tyson Miller yet this season. How's he doing?
He's doing well. We're going to open him up tomorrow at Urbandale just in a 200. Like I said, he's been battling a little bit of injury, but he's ready to rock now, and I'm very excited to see him open up. Like we've been real precautionary with him. He was one where we're getting into the season. It's a very short season in Iowa, as everyone knows. I kept telling him, I said, we have all the time to move forward. We just can't go backwards, and now I think he's ready to go.
All right, and then just one other note from that meet at South Dakota State. Jamison Patton won the high jump at 6'4", and of course last year he placed fourth in the state meet at 6'6" after just picking up the event a few weeks earlier. You know, if you give him a whole season to work on his technique, you got to feel like, you know, he's a guy that can maybe win state.
Yes, Patton's going to have his hands full. We got I don't focus on too many teams. I know who our competitors are. We've got a big jumper out there over in Iowa City High. I can't pronounce his last name, so I'm not going to butcher, but he's gone 6'10 and a quarter. I know Patton is a very, very competitive athlete, and he might be one of the most athletic people I've ever seen. I think if he picked up a tennis racket, he would make it to state and probably place top three. If he picked up a ping pong paddle, he's just that athletic. And not only that, the positive energy and how good of a kid is, he's going to give it his all, and he's going to place as high as he can for us. I do know that.
Well, you guys have a couple of outdoor meets coming up this week, I believe, weather permitting. I think you said Urbandale, but you guys go to Southeast Polk tomorrow.
That's what I meant, Southeast Polk tomorrow. Okay. Urbandale's next week. I keep I'm mixing up all the meets that are coming up soon.
Well, I'm going to try to get over to Southeast Polk, so I want to make sure I'm going to the right place.
But, yep.
And then you have the Valley meet on Saturday, right?
Yep. That Valley meet, Dan, I'm not going to lie to you, it's going to be hot for all times. There's all the big hitters are going there to that meet. Like I said, I don't jump meets. I'm very excited for tomorrow at Southeast Polk. We've got some really nice things put together. We are missing a few pieces, and the kids that we need to step up are ready to do that, and they're going to show us that tomorrow as well. And then we're going to turn around and back-to-back meets and go into Saturday. But Saturday is going to be a real fun meet for anyone who wants to come down to Valley and watch. It's going to be a special day.
What's the big focus for you guys this time of year? Is the main thing trying to get into Drake as many events as you can?
So, like I said, I know Drake's a very special thing, and I know it's one of those things where we're going after a few things that we haven't qualified yet, but, I think we're going to get a lot of people in there based on time. I know that blue standard puts a lot of pressure on kids, so I try to take the pressure off of that blue standard, and that's where I've really been focusing on, let's just win. And if we do that, the times are going to be there. You know, I know we got a couple kids on the brink of things, but most importantly, right now we're focusing on our team and we want to be happy in May. Drake is a very special race. I'm not taking anything away from Drake, but I do know at the end of the year, our team wants to be happy in May. I call it championship month. We got conference first, then we go to districts, and districts is the most important meet of the year. Everybody knows that. And then we go into the Blue Oval late May, and that's where we want to be real happy at.
Well, yeah, of course, after placing third a year ago, I imagine the guys, you know, have their sights set on maybe an even bigger trophy this year, you know, and you got to feel like the potential's there.
Like I said, I know it's still early in the season. We've been training hard. We're far from fresh, but like I said, I am a track nerd when it comes to that. I got a lot of points on paper, Dan.
Well, Dowling won last year's state meet with 93 points, and Iowa City High was a distant second with 63.5. I know you said you don't focus too much on the other teams, but you kind of have to see what's going on out there. I don't know if you've seen too much of those teams yet, but do you feel like those two might be in the mix at the end of the year as well?
I got my eye on three other teams. Two that you just mentioned, Iowa City High, Dowling Catholic, and Linmar is going to make a heck of a push as well, I think. And then there's a couple other wild cards out there that I got my eye on, but I know we're right in the mix of that if we focus on Ankeny.
Well, it should be a fun season. I'm looking forward to it. And, hey, maybe I'll see you over there tomorrow night, Coach. And thanks for coming in tonight. Appreciate
it. Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Dan.
You bet. All right. You've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. I want to thank my guests again for coming in tonight. We had former Ankeny girls basketball coach Drew McAnally. I enjoyed talking about some of the career highlights from his career. And then we also had Coldwell Banker realtor Andy Logan on for his semi-regular appearance. And then we finished up with new Ankeny boys track coach Jordan Mullen. Enjoyed getting to talk to him in person for the first time. I can tell he's got a lot of passion for the job, and I'm looking forward to seeing his team either tomorrow over at Southeast Polk or on Saturday over at Valley, which I guess is going to be a really good meet. So I might try to make it over there on Saturday and come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.